Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And I tell you what, it's in the books, National Signing Day. So we are going to zero in and talk about the Big 12 Conference, some of the new and fresh faces that we can look forward to. The guy that's going to be helping us out this weekend, one of our good friends, Joey Lucci with Phil Steele Magazine and PhilSteele.com. Joey, it's great to have you on this weekend. I thought you'd be like in the Bahamas or in Hawaii, something, you know, taking some time off. But once again, Phil's got you working hard in the office, doesn't he?
Yeah, actually, you know, college football, what, it's 365 days a year. So, you know, there really is no off season. And just when you think the bowls are completed, you got National Signing Day. Spring's right around the corner, and before you know it, the 2010 season will be kicking off here shortly.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to talking about some of the faces that are going to be coming into the Big 12 Conference. I know that you've been kind of doing some reflective reporting and some of the juniors and the seniors that will be coming back. But as we approach, you know, Super Bowl 44 this weekend, what are you going to be doing with the family? Kind of hanging out in front of that TV, I assume?
Actually, not many people know this, but I'm actually a pretty big New Orleans fan. We're in the Cleveland area, and the Browns had left for about 3 years, and so I started drawing interest in the New Orleans Saints, and lo and behold, they're playing in the Super Bowl, so I got a little bit of interest in that, and actually I'm going to have a little bit of a get-together, you know, with the family over the house on Sunday. You know, nothing special, but just watch the game and that nature.
Well, there certainly is a number of compelling storylines when you talk about the Super Bowl. Of course, just a terrific quarterback matchup, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning.
You know, Peyton Manning's dad played for New Orleans, and, you know, when that franchise was real bad, that started in 1967, and
yeah,
they were bad, and so... You know, so it's interesting how that all ties together a little bit.
You know, kind of a lot of people's hearts, even Obama, that is kind of giving that stamp of approval and that endorsement, just because that is a city that's bouncing back from the damage that was left by Hurricane Katrina in 2005.
Yeah, I know. It damaged the city. I obviously damaged some college football teams as well. When you're talking about, you know, they played, what, every game on the road that year, so to speak, and San Antonio had adopted them as their home stadium, but you're still traveling, and the way, you know, from that to where they are at now, if you could have told them when that destruction happened you'd be playing in the Super Bowl, I don't think anyone would have believed it. So it is a good story, and I think, though, it's funny too, the mayor of New Orleans can't even, you know, get tickets for the Super Bowl, so it's...
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Well, I heard he was going around trying to get tickets. I can't believe they don't have any for him yet, but I'm sure he'll end up being there and doing that, but that was the last word I heard, but that's interesting. But what a great story. You couldn't write it any better, and I think when people looked at the playoffs this year in the NFL and they saw the two teams, I think this is what the matchup everybody wanted to see, these two high-profile offenses.
Two high-profile offenses, but I want to touch on what you've been talking about in terms of this city, the resiliency, and just how, you know, everybody can kind of join together and to be able to build back. I mean, who would have thought in 2005, just everything that they had endured, and to be in the biggest platform and stage?
I also think that when you look at the Super Bowl, if you're not a fan of one of the other teams, I think this is one of the hardest Super Bowls to root against somebody, because you obviously with the New Orleans we just talked about, and of course, with the Colts, Peyton Manning's such a likable person, especially, you know, on the TV commercials and how he comes across. And, you know, so I think a lot of people are just going to be watching it if they don't have allegiance to one side or the other. It's just kind of a sit back and see what happens. So.
Well, you bring up a great point, too, Joey. You were talking about offensively. Both these teams, they love to put up the points. New Orleans averages almost 32 points a game, and the Colts almost 26. Any thoughts on, you know, who might have the edge on that?
You know what? I think when people talk about Peyton Manning in the offense, there's nothing the Saints are going to throw at Peyton Manning on the Super Bowl that he's not seen before. He dissects everything. He's just, you know, he knows the offense inside and out. And on the other thing with New Orleans, you know, I think the same way with Drew Brees, you know, coming over there, you know, taking a chance on him. You remember, he had that shoulder problem. He could have ended up in Miami if New Orleans didn't take a chance. What a you know, great chance they took there. I think the edge, though, would probably be with Peyton Manning in that, but just slightly on that, but, you know, but not much.
How would you rank him just as far as, I mean, obviously one of the all-time greats to have ever played the quarterback position?
Peyton Manning wins the Super Bowl this year, you've got to start talking about him in the top three all-time quarterbacks, if not start mentioning his name at number one. But I have a feeling if the Colts do win the Super Bowl this year, even if they don't, I think Indianapolis might get to one or two if he sticks around for you know, three, 4 more years.
We are talking to Joey Lucci, Phil Steele Magazine, philsteele.com. And I got to ask you, before we kind of start breaking down the Big 12 Conference, what have you been working on?
You know what? Actually getting the magazine ready. It's a full-year process. You know, Phil writes all, you know, the magazine and everything. But, you know, all the stat work, all the putting things together, behind the scenes, you know, no one sees a lot, putting the covers together. You know, that's what we're working on here. And that takes a full year to do that and put that in, to do it right, you know, and right by our stands. I think the magazine speaks for itself when you see the accuracy in it and just how well all the information's put and the accurate information. You know, things are checked. You know, just because you put a stat there doesn't mean that's right. So we'll double, triple it, you know, 4 times, 5 times, check it and make sure everything's 100% in there.
And I think you've told me before, like, is everything solidified and done by the month of May or is it June or...
We will have the magazine out probably the getting closer to May. It'll be on the newsstands, I believe, June 8th, early June, June 8th, somewhere around that area. It'll be available.
Speaking of dates, earlier this week on Wednesday, it was National Signing Day, and a number of the schools in the Big 12 Conference did extremely well. A lot of folks have been ranking. How did the teams do? Saying Texas came out on top, Oklahoma. When you've been covering these teams, these schools, what can we look forward to as far as some of the returns that are going to be coming in next year?
I mean, Texas and Oklahoma are always going to draw the big classes and stuff like that. You know, the other schools such as, you know, Baylor and A&M, but are going to kind of be secondary to them in the state of Texas. And I talk about Oklahoma; they do draw a lot of Texas people. But I think it's interesting. You know, once again, the Big 12 has three of the top 25 signing classes. You know, of course, they're big appeals there. When you look at it, you know, sometimes when you look, people get too excited about the signing classes. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying you shouldn't, because it's a huge day for a high school kid to play a major in a major college in a conference. You know what? They haven't stepped on the field yet. And in most cases, in these bigger conferences, these players are coming in. Very few are going to play and play right away. You're getting them ready for 2 years or 3 years down the line to keep that long tradition. And I think that's what we have to understand at first. But, you know, you do see some kids. I know that USC landed the top offensive lineman from Minnesota. He might have went to Ohio State. There's a lot of things he could have went to, which kind of surprises me, the state of their team is right now. But I think that's one thing you got to learn. These players are going to come in. Most of the time when they go to these big programs, they're not going to play right away. Or, you know, sometimes when you're very talented, you want to play right away and go to kind of a lower conference. And I don't mean lower in the sense that they're bad. I just mean, not obviously highly recognized as a Texas or Oklahoma. And when you see these guys going to these conferences, you know, that's why the parity of college football is starting to shape up a little bit more than in years past. I remember Paul Bear Bryant days in Alabama. I don't remember, but stories, obviously. In Alabama, he used to sign, before they had, you know, you only can sign a certain amount of kids, he used to sign them all. And they might not have ever played for the Crimson Tide, and he would say, well, at least they're not playing for anybody else. those days are long gone, but I think it's interesting.
It is amazing, as you had just talked about a moment ago, USC Lane Kiffin certainly landing on his feet. He signed 5 5-star recruits. We haven't had a chance to have you in the program since he did land at USC. What was your take on that whole situation, how it all went down, and kind of leaving Tennessee hanging out to dry?
He basically just used them, okay, I'm going to step on, you know, stepping stone just to get to that job. Now, he has ties with USC and things like that. You know, had he known Pete Carroll had rumors he was going to go, but I think that kind of caught some people off shock too when he went to Seattle, and then, you know, he made the jump. So it's a good thing he's across the other side of the country, so to speak, because I don't think he has a lot of fans right now in Knoxville, Tennessee. So it really did surprise me. It did, like I said, but in a thing, it didn't surprise me because I think that's where he ultimately wanted to be. You know, Pete Carroll taking over the Seattle Seahawks job actually surprised me a little bit more.
The National Signing Day, it is in the books, and we are going one-on-one with Joey Lucci with Phil Steele Magazine, philsteele.com. And let's start things off by talking about the Oklahoma Sooners. Obviously, the big need was offensive linemen. Tell me about Landry Jones. I mean, you know, what is going to be the future? Will he be the guy to lead them all the way to a national championship?
Well, you know what? I think when you look at Landry Jones, I think the big part is he's got DeMarco Murray coming back as the running back, and I think DeMarco is on the verge of actually leaving as well, too. You know, you lose Chris Brown from last year, but now he is the number one guy, and if he could stay healthy, this is a running back that can give him a 1,500, you know, plus yard season, and I mean that because he can take the pressure off of Landry Jones. Plus, Jones got more exposure this year than he was supposed to, and what I mean by that is the beginning of the season, it was Sam Bradford. You know, and Bradford calls it quits and says, listen, you know, I've got the problem with the arm. I'm going to, you know, go to the NFL. So Jones actually gains that whole year of experience. And, you know, he was a redshirt, he's a redshirt freshman, and that was huge. So he got all that plus, you know, a nice bowl win with them. You know, they played Stanford. They played a good Stanford team. So I think that quarterback-wise, running back-wise, and with Ryan Broyles coming back, you saw him when he's healthy. What amazes me, this is a guy that he broke his shoulder blade and was projected to be out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yes, and he came back.
Misses 1 week, comes back, and basically, you know, he's got Miller and Caleb plus the other young receivers coming in. They can mentor those guys. So I think Oklahoma's going to be fine. And that offensive line that we all said was the problem. You know, if you look at it, they've got 9 guys I'm looking at right here that are coming back with starting experience. And that's amazing that at least started one game. So now that offensive line becomes a veteran offensive line. They've gone through the turmoil. They can gel a little bit. Offensively, Oklahoma is going to be fine.
Hopefully they will, because last year they finished 8-5.
You know, a lot of schools would take 8-5 in a bowl trip. Not Oklahoma. I, you know the standard at Oklahoma. You got to be in the double digits each and every year.
The bar is set so high, but they did sign. Bob Stoops signed 28 players, 17 out of the state of Texas. It is remarkable. I will say this, Joey. As you look around, you kind of maneuver around the Big 12 conference. Just how many players come from the state of Texas?
It's amazing. Texas is such a hotbed for high school football, and of course Friday nights. It's ghost towns and companies and stores and everything when those games are being played, and so much pride there. And when I think about it, growing up in the state of Ohio, Ohio's the same way, and so is Pennsylvania. But I would say that Texas reigns when it comes to that. I mean, they take their football very seriously down there.
Well, we got to take care of our friends at Oklahoma State with the Cowboys. They finished 9-4 last year. They, too, also signed from Texas 22 players. Mike Gundy obviously doing a terrific job. Just as you've had a chance to kind of reflect on their season, their program, what's impressed you the most as they look forward to go ahead?
I think the problem with their program, not really a problem, but Kendall Hunter not really being, healthy. I know Keith Tostin was the man, and he actually stepped in and filled in nice. But, you're wondering when he's going to be healthy, when he's not. Zach Robinson, great career at Oklahoma State, at times was not healthy. They kind of fizzled again at the end of the year last year. I've never seen a team get more dominated at Bedlam than I did Oklahoma State. I mean, they couldn't do anything against the Sooners. And I think they just ran into a Sooner club that was embarrassed the week prior against Texas Tech. So, they had some motivation coming in, plus it's your rival. So they got like a double whammy. Plus in the bowl game, I was really disappointed too. 7 points in the bowl game and a team with this offense. But when I look at Oklahoma State next year, there's a lot of things that got to be filled, especially it starts off with the offensive line. Russell Okung, I mean, he's an amazing talent there. They're losing Andrew Lewis, another 13-game starter at center. Another left guard, Noah Franklin. So I mentioned in the offensive line because Oklahoma Sooner fans know how difficult it is to have a lot of talent, but the offensive line to be a question mark. So I think Oklahoma State goes in next year, question marks at the offensive line, obviously at the quarterback position. Obviously Weeden and Cater are the front runners right now. But the only thing I think you look at, an emergence from the wide receiver position came through because of the Dez Bryant situation, and if Kendall Hunter coming back, is a plus too. But there's going to be a little bit of problems I think Oklahoma State is going to have. But, knowing Mike Gundy and what he's done with that program, he can turn some things around.
You know, we've hit on the Oklahoma schools, the Sooners, the Cowboys. Let's head south on I-35. All of my Texas Longhorn fans are going to be screaming. How can you not be talking about Texas? They did so well as far as in terms of who they signed. But what can those Longhorn fans look forward to next year?
I think good things for Longhorn fans. I think a lot of people say, losing, obviously, your leader for the last 4 years, and Colt McCoy, You know, and let's look at the national championship game. I mean, Colt McCoy gets hurt five plays into it. You know, if he had stayed healthy, you know, it would have been a different outcome. I don't know, because that would never been played out. We're never going to find out, but you'd have to think. But, you know, look at Garrett Gilbert for a second. Here's a kid playing, you know, he's back there. He's like, I have no chance of getting in. I'm a true freshman.
Can you believe that championship game? I mean.
And then they go, oh, by the way, this is your first, you know, big action of your career. Oh, by the way, it's against the best defense in the country. Yeah, and by the way, it's in the national championship game. I thought when you saw him play, I thought the game kind of moved a little bit too fast for him.
It did, but in the second half, though, Joe, I thought he acclimated.
When he did that, you didn't have to expect that. The game moved fast. They were running more conservative, you know, with that. You know, Greg Davis was calling him more of a conservative type of offense. And then the second half, the reins kind of settled down a little bit, and you saw that quarterback. Now, that quarterback, Gilbert, will not have to start off playing Alabama next year. What he's going to do is he's going to start off playing Rice and Wyoming. You know, so he'll in those first two games, he's going to get better acclimated with his system, and he's going to be more comfortable. And I think the emergence of Trey Newton at the running game, McGee's coming back. Hopefully Whitaker, if he can stay healthy, you can actually have that stable of running backs. And I think that's what something the Longhorns have been missing for years. They don't have that running, that 1,000-yard running back to hang their hat on. It's been kind of running back by committee, Colt McCoy. And I think next year, for them to be successful, and I do think they will be, I think one of those guys is going to emerge and be that 1,000-yard back. And, of course, all the great receivers they have are going to help Gilbert, even losing a player like Jordan Shipley.
Well, it is interesting as you talk about Garrett Gilbert, the fact that Mac Brown signed during National Signing Day was a quarterback named McCoy. And, of course, that is Colt McCoy's younger brother, Case McCoy, and he was a 3-star signing. I thought that's going to be kind of cool to see how he plays out.
Now that, you know, now his dad can watch, you know, 4 more, 5 more years of Texas football.
Well, you know, high praise for Colt McCoy. I mean, I thought that was really cool, too, at the end of the season, how, like, he proposed to his girlfriend and that whole thing.
I think when you look at it, though, and a lot of people will say, you know, could Colt have played? Could he done this? You know, it's amazing the decisions these young guys have to make. When he's in the locker room, and I want to put this out there because I don't think a lot of people have talked about it, but I kind of thought about it for a second. You're in the locker room. There might have been a chance he probably could have come back and played that game, but then the trainer maybe, and you know they've got the best of the best there at the national championship game, he's got to make a decision in 5-10 minutes. Hey, if you go back, you can risk the NFL. You can risk your future. You can risk this. You can risk that. Or, and you know Colt McCoy, you know, the emotions that he wanted to be out there and play, or you kind of take it, you know, you gotta shut it down now. Unfortunately, it is a national championship game, one more shot to get a title, and, you know, think about your future. I mean, think about it. It takes me 10 minutes sometimes to decide what I'm going to eat for breakfast, and in 10 minutes, he almost had to make, you know, kind of a life decision change right there. And, you know, we don't know what happened in that locker room going back and forth, the x-rays here or there, but I believe they did everything they could to try to put him back on the field, and I think it was probably one of the hardest decisions he's ever had to make.
You know, just being a football fan, period, I mean, my heart broke. I had near tears for Colt McCoy. That was horrible.
I got, you know, and that's the thing, and I had showed some emotion, too, because, you know, watching him for so many years play and be the, you know, basically the face of the Texas Longhorn football program for these many years, and then playing in the top game in the last game of his career, and then that happened to him. It just, you know, if you don't show emotion like that, you're not a college football fan.
Okay, now the other hot topic we definitely have to share and discuss on our program this weekend: Texas Tech Red Raiders. Of course, they have a brand new coach in Tommy Tuberville. We know the whole fallout about Mike Leach. We don't need to go into all that, but he's only bringing in 6 offensive recruits this year. He signed from Texas 13 players. Players signed 25. What kind of job do you think he's going to do?
I think the verdict's still going to be out, and I know that's kind of a thing, and I know we're probably going to get it more in Tommy Tuberville and Texas Tech probably, well, I would probably think right before the season starts with me and you, but, you know, looking at it first glance, I think, you know, the players have to decide. There's going to be some players, you know, you might see some players go and things of that nature, and it's kind of maybe an uneasy situation. You know, we don't want to talk about it. You still got kind of the Leach thing going on over there. So, you know, this is, even though they ended the season well, you know, with, you know, that bowl win over Michigan State, you know, I knew Ruffin McNeil, their defense coordinator, if you've watched a bowl game, he actually made a plea to stay with the team. He wanted to be the head coach. Personally, I probably, you know, he didn't have the experience, obviously, as Tommy Tuberville. I don't know. I probably would have took a chance on him. Now he's head coach of East Carolina, but he actually had, you know, a love affair with the kids, and you could tell this is a well-respected guy. But, you know, he's gone. Tuberville comes in. I know he had some issues with Auburn when he was there, you know, prior. You know,
but he also had success at Auburn, though, too.
Is this offense, though, that has been a system that Mike Leach has been in place, that he's going to come in, you know, it might take a while because now he's going to implement his system with, you know, basically a system that's, you know, you're running a four wide receiver, you know, passing offense, very aggressive on fourth down. So, you know, it's going to take some time. Plus, you know, you lose some guys too off that, and who knows how much more you might lose where guys might decide to transfer. So Texas Tech is one of those schools with a big question mark right now. And this is going to be a wait and see, kind of wait for spring and see how everything turns out. I hope the best for him because I know being, you know, Lubbock, and I know that program loves this Red Raider nation. But, you know, I think they're going to take a step down a little bit from the years when Leach was there the last 2-3 years.
You're right, Joey. I mean, there's no doubt that Mike Leach did do an amazing job. When you talk about the X's and O's, he also, there were some outbursts, some things that, you know, perhaps he could have handled in a little bit better of a manner. What was your take as this was all going about?
You know what? The take is this. You know, I saw it from both sides. You know, Mike Leach did things the way he wanted to do them. But then again, the guy just won. I mean, if you look at the Big 12, since the inception of the Big 12 in 1996, he was the only, you know, Texas Tech was the only school to be bowl eligible every single year. So he was doing something right, you know, on the football field. Now, I think there's stuff that I'm never going to know or nobody's ever going to know. That maybe have hashed out. But that's a situation that I don't think you're ever going to always uncover the truth, and you can make both cases for both sides here and there. I mean, was Adam James a troublemaker? I know I heard that. You know, Leach disciplined him here. You know, Leach did some things off the wall. He's saying that the administration was out to get him. I don't know any of that. All Texas Tech has to do is what they have to do is they have to really put this behind them. And, you know, if Tuberville can come in here and put that behind them and have a winning season and start the year off right and get that team in the right direction, I think that'll be a good thing. But, if they start to struggle and things like that, in the back of your mind, you're always going to go, well, what if Leach was still here? What would we be doing and things like that? So I think this is a really critical year for the Texas Tech University.
Well, Joey, a team that did not have a winning season, 2009, their record was 6-7, was Mike Sherman's Texas A&M Aggies. But I think some really good things are taking place down in College Station. What's your assessment?
Actually, I agree with you wholeheartedly. But when you look at this, how about Jared Johnson? Right now, he's got to be, if you think about it, he's got to be a early favorite for like the Big 12 Player of the Year for what this guy can do. He's going into his senior year. I think the guy's very talented. He can run and pass, and he's learning to pass better. They've got Michael at the running back position and Gray. There's a lot of talent on this team coming back, and I think this will be a Texas A&M team that'll be the best team, obviously, under Sherman. But I think they can flirt right around that double-digit win total this year. I really do. I think there's a lot of talent coming back. They played a lot. They played in the history of their school. I think it was something like 23 true freshmen last year. And all these true freshmen, they gained all that experience, and they're coming back. Their defense has a lot of guys coming back. You know, they're pretty loaded that way. So with a veteran quarterback, a lot of younger players playing at such a high level at such an early age, they got to learn all that. Plus, being in a bowl with all those extra bowl practices, even though they did finish 6-7, I tell you what, I think this Texas A&M team is going to flirt with double-digit wins next year. Looking at them right from the get-go.
Joey Lucci, an amazing guy, of course, with us. Phil Steele Magazine and philsteele.com, and the National Signing Day, it is in the books. And we're looking forward, Joey, to spring practice, catching up with you, getting scouting reports, doing the whole thing. But I got to ask you, because I know you have a true affinity and love for the NBA. How about the Thunder? They are just rolling. Have won 4 straight.
Looking at them, you always. I think you start wondering. You know, when's it going to happen? When some bad times going to happen? And it's not. This is a team you look at, and when you look at such a loaded West, they're just surprising. But here's the thing: you got the All-Star break coming up, and after the All-Star break, that's when these San Antonio's, these LA Lakers, Denver Nuggets. These elite teams of the West that are coming out, are going to start to play their ball. Now, the one thing about those teams and some others, they're veteran teams. They've experienced it. They've gone through the long haul. Oklahoma City has not yet. Hopefully, Kevin Durant can, keep, as young as he is, can keep this young team kind of focused that way. But that's my only concern. When the grind starts to get down, you get to those last 20, 25 games. It's been a long season, starting to put your positioning for the playoffs. That's the thing. If they can get through that, maybe go 500 after the All-Star break, I think they'll be right there in a playoff spot. And even though that they might not go as far as, Oklahoma City fans are going to want them to go to, if they can get that first round and get all that experience, it builds, and you've got a nice thing going.
Well, Joey, you mentioned Kevin Durant, of course, making big headlines. Folks, I mean, even the crowd, when I've been at the Ford Center, they're chanting MVP, MVP. But the key with the Oklahoma City Thunder is the fact that they just have so much depth. I mean, it's not only their starting five. You got Russell Westbrook, who is really just, having a breakout season this year, playing like a superstar. But the depth that they have and how they're able to platoon in numbers and get so many players to come in and do some great things, from Serge Ibaka to James Harden. And it's a great young team. It certainly is one of the most compelling storylines in the NBA this year. And it's always fun to even hoop it up with you a little bit, Joey. Who knew that you were going to get to do all this on this day? Filling in at the last minute, doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, and you know what? Durant's kind of like, you wish, that what the economy would do. He just keeps on getting better.
He's like a fine wine. He just gets better with age.
When you think that, he can't do something, he does it. And like I said, he's a young guy that's going to be a star in this league for 8, 9, 10 years to come. So.
He's a wonderful young man, too. Kind of refreshing to have one of those young, just talented.
He's not a player that, he's going to get in trouble. He's not a guy that is bringing attention to himself. He just goes on and plays hard each and every night. And he's what you can build a franchise, he reminds me of is when you build a franchise and you start with it. When you build like something like San Antonio, you have Tim Duncan, just an all-around great basketball player that just goes out there and plays every single day as hard as he can. And being very talented helps as well, too. You can really do a lot, and that attracts not only, it makes him play better, but it attracts some other nice free agency signings that you might to put some other pieces in place to get to that next level.
Outstanding. Good stuff there, Joey Lucci. Send our best to Phil, and we will catch up here real soon. Okay, Joey, thanks so much for stopping by. Okay, stick around. We got much more straight ahead. Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. That's right. We're talking Super Bowl 44. I'm going to get you guys ready for it and all the festivities here in just a minute.